Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and I'm recording a solo Friday morning GM here for release on 6-6. Some big news from Ravens land today. We'll get to this last in the show, the Rashad Bateman extension. But we have a few other things to talk about on Friday morning GM first. One is the roster spots that were created as planned departures in the cases of Pierce and Marcus Williams. Both created a little bit of cap. All of that was expected and baked into to what the Ravens had planned for the year, of course. They were very smart in setting up these contracts so that they would run through June 1, then have allow for a release at that point, because they wanted to have the ability to release Justin Tucker before June 1st and designate him as post June 1, which they did. So Ravens very sharp, very astute in terms of their roster space considerations. They've actually been playing a couple players short in camp. Like John Jenkins has not been able to show up and practice until after June 1st. So he missed the one OTA because of that. Not a huge deal or anything, but a couple days or 3 days, I guess, of practice that he could have been there. But anyway, it is what it is. John Jenkins is now with the team practicing, and the roster spots are cleared. There's cap space here. The Ravens, I wanted to go over one OTA element. It got mentioned in today's interview segment with Zach Orr, and it's actually been happening for a couple of days. The Ravens have been trying out a little bit of JAD at safety. So that's on the record now. Jeff Zriebeck asked the question or confirmed it within the interviews. You can listen to that. Or said some things about JAD, which are encouraging, that he's picking up very quickly. Of course, you never don't say that really about a player. And that he's the most intelligent guy or close to it in the defensive backs room. I really don't have any. I don't know if I've even seen JAD at the podium. So I really don't have any clue as to whether that might be true or not. Even if I'd heard him at the podium, I probably wouldn't understand how his football acumen is playing out in terms of absorbing a playbook. It has been a problem in the past that JAD's lack of on-field experience, be that from college at Alabama, where he played a relatively small number of games, or in the pros, where he's basically been shut down for a whole bunch of preseasons, His actual on-field live fire experience has been very limited, both in college and the pro. So that has been a problem. Now, one of the things I've always had an issue with JAD was that he couldn't find the ball in the air. Had the speed to play the position, had the length to play the position. He looks like an aircraft carrier corner. The problem is he's got Brandon Stevensitis in his inability to find the football in the air, which has led to problems, kind of on an ongoing basis. He has some issue with penalties, but that's really not even the major part. The major part is when you can't find the football in the air, your only last resort is to attack the catch point, which is, a fairly limited last resort. Oftentimes the receiver will have too big an advantage in terms of where he catches it for you to be able to dislodge that football. So a move to safety, I think it is reasonable I think one thing that it shows you is just how entirely desperate the Ravens are right now. This move for JAD makes some sense from the standpoint of there might not be room for him at corner. As a fourth-year guy, you know, he's out already kind of on the roster bubble, as all fourth-year players are, because you don't have any future value to the Ravens. There's no sand in the hourglass left for future value. Whereas the two first-round corners, they're both drafted in the sixth round, so it's not like they have enormous pedigrees. But Kone and Longerbeam, JAD needs to outplay those guys at corner. And I think that's going to be difficult for him in some ways. Longerbeam really has some pedigree to play the slot based on his size. He might be a return guy they could depend on. So he's got some other things that he brings to the table. That's not any part of JAD's game is anything having to do with the return game. JAD, a special teams player who can contribute there, but he's not a guy who would be a factor in the return game. Neither of those guys would be a guy I would move to safety immediately. And they all have, you know, speed. They both have speed that's pretty decent. I forget, with Kone might be right around 4.5 and Longerbeam's like 4.39. So, I mean, we're talking about, you know, solid speed. You're not worrying about the guy as he drifts into the 4.5s and up to 4.6 in terms of him not quite meeting the standard of speed. It is a very steep drop off, by the way, between 4.5 and 4.6 for a corner is kind of the critical range where you can definitely start losing a lot of battles, get more grabby, have to get much more defensive about how you play the position in there. So anyway, JAD at safety, I think, is a good idea for that reason. You know, it might work out. It might not. I think the Ravens are trying things out right now. They've got Kane and Braid. I expect both of them to get substantial playing time in the preseason. That's probably your second half back end duo for 2.5 of the preseason games, would be my guess. Maybe for all of them, maybe for all three second halves. That is, I think they'll be back there. They'll be getting lots of playing time, trying to figure out can these guys learn how to play the back end. The Ravens are clearly turning over a lot of stones right now. They now have a little bit more freedom to go out. And certainly from a cap perspective, but also from a roster perspective, to go out and find that next guy too. So Armour Davis, this is kind of the opportunity right now in OTAs and then maybe right at the beginning of camp. I think they will come to a judgment fairly quickly on whether or not he's the guy. The Ravens are really like -2 at safety now. By the end of OTAs would be my guess, probably before the beginning of camp, they will have an idea that they don't think that one of those three options is going to work, or they well might be in that position. And if that's the case, I don't see any version of this world where they don't go out and get another safety. I've been on record many times on this show as how important it is to have the flexibility to move Hamilton around. It's fine if there's four defensive backs on the field. It's fine if he's a split field strong safety, or if he's a strong safety, whatever that means in terms of positioning. I don't want that to be a locked in position. I think the Ravens have suffered some from him being forced into a specific role on the field. I think there's no doubt about it in my mind that Starks is the free safety from day one. So he's really coming into a position like Ed Reed did, in terms of the opportunity is there as well as the expectation. Reed, a first round draft pick, Starks also, of course, and he's going to move into a back end safety role. And actually, you know, Reed was a strong safety when he came up, and there was another UDFA from that draft who immediately got playing time and actually was a pretty good player for about 4 years in there for the Ravens. That was Will Demps. So I think that it could well be that we'll just see Starks from day one, and we'll never look back. I don't expect them to try and tap into Starks's versatility in 2025. I think he's got too much value to the team on the back end. So I think that's where they'll use him. So I've been, you know, observing the Armour Davis thing at OTAs, and it's something that has been, I could not report on it, and we haven't had the right people at the podium to ask the question. I appreciate Jeff doing that today, and that was definitely a good thing to get on the record. So anyway, interesting to see. We'll see how it works out in terms of JAD and safety, and maybe he's a guy they'll do it. But it's okay. I believe it is now okay to report that he's playing safety for all the remaining days. And I'll probably have some reports on that in terms of what I'm seeing, because he'll definitely be one of the guys that I'm most interested in looking at. at that position. All right. Anyway, JAT at safety, that's one of the interesting things. The next thing, and the most important thing, very interesting move today. The Ravens extend Rashad Bateman. Now, I've been on record as saying what a wonderfully valuable contract that Bateman was under. He had $10.75 million on his old deal that runs through 2026. This extension adds another $36.75 million on top of that, that runs through 2029. So Bateman will not be a UFA until age 30. The Ravens are definitely going to get the best years of his career out of this, whatever there is. I mean, the expectation would be it'd be the best years of his career. I wouldn't be surprised if 2024 is the best year he ever has, but these will be, in any case, the next few years, the expectation is these would be the best years of his deal. I think it's a very sensible deal for the Ravens for multiple reasons. The first is that the additional years are quite cheap, particularly when you consider inflation at the position that is likely to occur with increases in the cap. And I'll do a little math here for you, but if the cap were to go up by, let's say, 7% per year, and I don't know if that's reasonable or not, for the next, say, 4 years, and then the final year, salaries for wide receivers or salaries for all positions would be about 31% higher. Well, the 31%, if you increment that to what he's likely to be earning, that it's Bateman is going to think he's very underpaid. But that's better that occurs then than it occurs now when he's got 2 years under contract, because there was a risk of a holdout potentially that could have occurred. Could have been this year, could have been next year. An extension, obviously, is going to be cheaper right now. I think the Ravens were smart about this. I think Bateman is frankly being very smart in terms of taking risk off the table. He's seeing what's happened to Ardarius Washington. He knows there's some injury risk. And no doubt there will be seller's remorse, I guess, in his case, if a year from now he has a season that's 100% of what he did in 24, even 95% of what he did in 2024, because he's going to feel that much more underpaid. I think this is a great 80-20 deal in terms of what you might pay for the top receiver in the league a few years from now. And I think that this contract still places Bateman as one of the best bargain receivers in the entire NFL over the five-year period as a whole, largely as a function of these initial years. I don't really have any problem with the $12.25 million a year increment to the contract, particularly given that it's the last 3 years in terms of what that value is either. Cody Brian McFarland, he thinks this might create about another million in cap space. I don't really care about that. We're going to talk about cap space and what they do with that in a minute. But I think the deal for Bateman is a very good one for the Ravens. I think it's probably also a good one for Bateman. It locks in a level of generational wealth that I hope he can be happy with. If he looks at this as I'm taking my career pass fail, he's just earned a passing mark right away. We don't have to worry about whether it's an A or a C minus in terms of optimizing his salary relative to his performance, but he's got a passing grade already in terms of that. And he'll live a very comfortable life and have money for his children, send his kids to whatever schools he wants to. You know, his kids will have all the opportunity that he wants them to have. So hopefully this is a good deal from Bateman's perspective. And I think the Ravens are most concerned about Bateman feeling it's not a good deal for him at some point. I think that's why a large reason why they went this way in terms of the extension. Bateman's agent really hurt him. If he's the one who told him, why don't you just hold out a couple of days, let him see what it's like. The 2 days that Bateman was late for camp that resulted in a year of lost service and whatnot, I think that's it clearly was a cost. It had a cost of millions of dollars to Rashad Bateman. It was very poorly timed in terms of his own career and what might have otherwise been. So it is what it is. You know, if you're Rashad, you work from here, I hope, and you say, hey, I get to play with Lamar Jackson. I have a chance each of the next 5 years probably to be in the Super Bowl because of that. I love the connection I have with my quarterback. And I'm playing on a great football team. And I think if you look at it from that perspective and the perspective that he's making a lot of money relative to almost every other human on earth, I think he's good. If he wants to compare himself to Jamar Chase or T. Higgins, who might well be earning more money, or Metcalf would be another guy who's earning a lot more money. I think he might say, wow, I'm underpaid relative to this guy a year from now if any one of those has a disappointing year or an injury or whatever, and Bateman has a year like 2024. So there are reasons why he could have some seller's remorse in his case. The Ravens could have buyer's remorse. My understanding is about $20 million of the money is guaranteed. So there will be some optionality at the end of the deal for the Ravens to get out early. I would hope, you know, honestly, at the price, I think the chance is less that the Ravens will be really dying to get out of this deal, but you never know for sure. Bateman has had kind of a sine curve of a career so far. When a mathematician says that, he means it's been severely up and down in terms of having some good years. Did not have a good year in 23 by any statistical measure. 24 was outstanding. He set the all-time record for wide receivers in terms of touchdown percent as a percentage of targets. Yards per target was the highest in Ravens history for a wide receiver. The other one was for a wide receiver too, by the way, the touchdown record, because Andrews set it for any receiver with 30 or more targets. So he's coming off a great year. He's signing, you know, high, and I think in a certain sense he might have maximized his value. He seems to be very happy about, you know, his Twitter comments since then, which I'm happy about. Hopefully this isn't something that 3 years from now or 2 years from now, probably 3 years from now, could be worse. He becomes very disgruntled because wide receiver salaries continue to escalate. And then that becomes a problem for him and the Ravens. He makes it the Ravens' problem with a holdout or whatever. That would be obviously unfortunate. But at the very least, the Ravens have kicked the can down the road on the holdout situation. And he should be in good shape. And he was at OTAs today. Lamar Jackson was not. So it's good that he's there and working. I guess if you're going to be in the building signing your contract, wouldn't be a reason to miss OTAs for that. And there's no longer a reason for him to like hold out because of injury, because it's the Ravens' problem in terms of the money that's on his contract for the early years of this anyway. Excuse me. Jake Vogel hit me up with some estimates on Bateman for 2025, 800 yards, 7 TDs, 9.3 yards per target. I'll say about this. I think 800 yards is pretty reasonable. This is going to be a spread offense. It might be a fresh legs offense. If Bateman were to get 800 yards, I think that's a good thing. He doesn't have to get 1,200 or 1,500 yards. The offense isn't built around him. It's built around Lamar. So Lamar's going to get his rushing yards, and Henry's going to get his rushing yards, and there's a whole bunch of receivers that are all going to get a share of something that'll be approximately 3,700 to 4,200 passing yards, maybe 3,500 to 4,200 passing yards from Lamar that will be spread out. It'll be closer to 3,500 and a good thing if the Ravens are winning and dominating other teams the way they have in the past. If they play too many scary games, as they have in some years in the past, then it's more likely that number is going to be higher. But the most important thing is that Jackson comes to camp with in shape. And we already saw in OTAs when he was there last week, he looks thin, moving around great, throwing the ball very well, very accurate for the start of OTAs, which is nice to see. I'm sure he spent some time working on his game with his own quarterback people, his own guru. And that probably has led to something new, because the great thing about Lamar Jackson is there's always something new. So he will have to get better at everything he does to maintain his play at a level like it was in 24. It's going to be very, very difficult for them to do that. I think Todd Monken had one of the most interesting comments a couple of days ago at the podium, which says we need to be very intentional about how we're looking at our game. And yeah, we did in aggregate, the offense was fantastic. And I'm paraphrasing all of this, but if you look at what we did right and wrong on some plays, there were some positives, there were some negatives, and we could do the things we did poorly better and maybe have a better aggregate result. I'll certainly have a better aggregate result is what he's saying. I think the other thing you need to look for is that every other team that plays the Ravens will be playing to defend the Lamar Jackson Henry mesh point and offense, and that will be highly trained for, and their responses will be specific, and they will look at what the Ravens did not do well. So the fact that Monken is looking at how can we improve the things that did not go well before is an extreme, I think that is an extremely positive thing, and it will make it harder for teams to hold down the Ravens offense. It's also going to be very hard for the Ravens to duplicate what they did last year. They had 2.86 points per drive. That's the key metric, as far as I'm concerned, is how many points per drive can they score? There are times in a game where the Ravens aren't really trying anymore to score points, but in 2019, there were 3.08 points per drive. It was a historic season done for almost no cap. It was a remarkable combination of circumstances that led to that. That won't happen again. Teams are better at figuring out how to defend Lamar Jackson. They'll certainly be better in some ways than they were in 2024 when Lamar went off again with a historic season that somehow did not get rewarded with the MVP award. So in terms of getting back to what this means for Bateman, Lamar's season is going to dictate in a lot of ways how Bateman succeeds in the year. And Bateman hopefully will do all the same things. He'll be a good deep threat. He'll be a guy who can cross the field and get open. He'll be a guy who can run good routes and make use of that space budget on the left side. We hope for all of those things. And Lamar will use some of that, but not necessarily all of that. You know, being an extended play threat is something we want to see from Bateman as being a big component of his yards, and in particular of his TDs. That'll impact his TDs a lot, is being an extended play threat. Anyway, that's it for the Bateman extension. And now they've got approximately $18 million in cap space. We don't know the exact number right now because we don't know how the Bateman contract is going to change cap space. But let's say it's $18 million because that's close enough for government work here. What do they do with that cap space? And there are three things that I think are natural to look forward to. The first is they're going to need about $5 to $6 million to get through the season in terms of the roster moves they have there. So always injuries and whatnot eat into your cap a little bit. If you have a really injury plagued year, you might have to pick up a bunch of guys that are near the vet minimum for about 15 games, and they end up costing you a prorated portion of the season. And let's say you miss, we'll call it six FTEs. Now, they don't have to be necessarily starters or anything, but they're just FTEs on the roster. You end up paying $6 million additional in terms of cap space for those guys, roughly. Okay. But figure about $1 million per player, some being vets, some being guys on earlier deals that they're bringing in and may have a different role. You have people you elevate from the practice squad. The Ravens have made liberal use of that. Those moves are not free when they elevate somebody because they have to pay them for that week, as if they're on the roster, but they have good reasons for doing it generally when they do. So $6 million, I would just earmark as being we better head into the season with that. They really want to be smart about it. Head into the season with 10, because if you head into the season with 10, you know what you can do? Make a move at the trade deadline. All right. The Ravens have not always been in a spot to do that. And other teams can make it easy for you to make a move at the trade deadline because they'll pick up a part of the cap. But what that usually means is you're giving up draft capital to do that. And when the Ravens acquired Roquan Smith, they had to give up extra draft capital to do it. It's worth it. So, no complaints about it in the long run. It was a second round pick and a fifth round pick. Ended up being very cheap for Roquan. The contract is another matter. And, he makes a lot of money, and I'm not saying everything is perfect on that front, but I would generally say the Ravens got value out of the Roquan Smith trade and the Roquan Smith re-signing. In terms of other players, though, if they want to acquire a high-value player at midseason and they have either all or some of the money necessary to pay his prorated salary for the remainder of the year, that's a really big advantage in terms of negotiating with the other team. The other team may be in a similar position. They don't want to eat a bunch of cap to do that. And they may want the cap more than the draft capital too. So it depends on who the team is, but they may certainly be in that position. So I'd be in favor actually of taking two scoops of ice cream into the regular season with, instead of going to 6 million, go with 10 or 12 million and give yourself some room to make deals. Now they do have some other things they need to consider in terms of of the money. The first is to sign a safety. Now, we just went through the JAD thing, and I think I pointed out the desperation that they're going through. Kane and Braid last preseason looked like dime safeties, all right? And they are guys who play very well close to the line of scrimmage, good tacklers. I trust them to do that role well. I don't trust them to be on the back end, not currently. So we'll see how that works out. They're both going to get their shot because, hey, they're here. All right. That's the main reason why they're getting this shot, and they will get it in the preseason. It's not that I think there's a great chance of either one of them working out. It's they're here. They're in the right place at the right time. I think the Ravens can go after two kinds of players at least. One is they can go grab a vet. They have the money to do it now. It can be a one-year deal. It is, if they do so, it's a Band-Aid solution. It's not, it's cap flushed for 1 year. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, it could be very bad. I mean, it could be Eddie Jackson again, where it's not just the loss of the money, which was not that big a deal in the Eddie Jackson situation because he made close to the vet minimum, a little more, and with some guaranteed money in his deal, which meant they couldn't really easily get.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Rid of him. They eventually did anyway, but they couldn't easily swallow that those dollars. But with Jackson, he was eating a roster spot, and that meant it was harder for the Ravens to get rid of him and then move on to another player who would have been basically just another incremental $1 million on a prorated basis they'd have brought in. And it probably would have been not a veteran safety I'm talking about, just that's, or could have been, or maybe it could have been a veteran safety hanging around. So the guys who are out there on a veteran basis, Chuck Clark at the vet minimum, I'd be fine with. I don't think he lets the Ravens down on the back end. He has some legitimate ball skills coming from the back to make plays. He's done some of his best play as a Raven in the dime in 2019. I think he would immediately be, maybe after Kyle Hamilton, the second smartest guy in the DB role. I might be the smartest. I mean, he might be the most understanding. He's certainly done the signal calling before. And, one of the comments that the Earl Thomas made when he was here is, why do they need me? They had Chuck Clark. I think Chuck Clark will not let the team down in terms of being in the right place when asked to play a split field role. So that's why I'd be in favor of him. I understand that he may have physical limitations that are going to cause problems. He has been a pretty good tackler throughout his career, so he's a guy I would trust on that end too. You can go in different direction and go for a more ball hawky safety back there. Geno Stone is a perfect example, who's not as good a tackler. That skill is usually more valued and they're less available. One thing I would like to see the Ravens do is go through their previous 2 years, maybe three, of draft picks and see if there's anybody maybe that's out there in shape looking for a job they could bring in for a workout. Find out, is the guy really ready to play football? Because a couple guys may have given up. Other players, they're still looking around, or they've been on a practice squad with somebody and they're available. But they're on some of them will be on a 90-man roster, and the Ravens honestly are down to you're down to players 28, 81 and above. If you take 90 times 32, you get 2880. And then the player 2881 is presumably the first player available right now. But there are probably a few safeties still who the Ravens looked at on the in the draft basis and they thought had warts for some reason, possibly a cornerback originally, you know, that were that had maybe speed that was not good enough to play corner, but they could maybe move to play safety. And I think the Ravens could look at one or even two more such players. I think they have room still for two safeties on the roster. And they probably have that room by camp at least if they make a decision on one of JAD, Braid, or Kane not being the right guy, or two if they make those decisions. So the Ravens will move forward. We'll see how it goes. But Clark, an exceptionally smart guy. He'd been my veteran favorite. There's other guys who would be available in terms of a back end half field role, I'm sure. And the Ravens are going to know those players better than I would in terms of guys they consider drafting over the last 2 years who didn't get, aren't on an NFL roster right now. So hopefully somebody like that, they can find out. The reason I'm in favor, by the way, of picking up a guy like that is it's a multi-year solution if it hits. So yes, it's less likely to work out than Chuck Clark, but Chuck Clark's only for 1 year, and this other guy could be for 4 years. I also think you might be at a point in Chuck Clark's career, however, where you might get multiple years of Chuck Clark cheap. He's been injured. He's been around. He's had some ups and downs in terms of his play on the field. And I think if he moves into a half-field role, has a decent year, plays good special teams for the Ravens because he would be doing that, then he becomes maybe a lifer again with the Ravens. Again, another guy who they bring back and could be a, you know, you sign him for 2 years and $3 million, or you sign him for something above the vet minimum, slight bonus for 2 years, kind of the Anthony Levine style or Albert McClellan style contract, I think would make a lot of sense for a player like Clark. Don't have to break the bank. And I don't like a lot of the older safeties, period, in terms of what they bring. I want a guy who actually puts the safe in safety in terms of half field play. Can make some plays on the football, can be in the right place, can make the tackles as needed, and allows Hamilton the freedom to move up closer to the line of scrimmage and play either dime or slot corner when the Ravens want him to. I think it also takes a lot of pressure off the Ravens' outside corner room, which is a lot of pressure has been put on by the fact that Ardarius Washington was hurt. So Ardarius Washington could have helped the team out by playing on the back end and helped Hamilton move up by playing the slot himself, by playing a pure free safety role and having Starks play somebody else. I mean, there's multiple ways in which Ardarius Washington could have been used because he's very versatile. But they're leaning very heavily on the versatile of Marlon Humphrey as the team is currently constituted. And one of the things that the Ravens will have to find out is who else can play slot. They don't have that Arthur Maulet guy right now that's in camp who'd be a fallback slot option, if that's where the direction they wanted to go. So the additional pressure put on the outside corner position by the loss of Ardarius Washington is non-negligible. And the Ravens are kind of banking on some things to work out. Either a JAD move to safety, Longer Bame and Kone both working out and being available to play an outside corner role. They got to set a lottery tickets right now. They're working on some of them may work out. The Ravens know what they think they drafted, or they think they know what they drafted, and hopefully they're going to be right about one of those guys in terms of Longer Bame or Kone at least. And if they are, then they might be okay. Chidobe Awuzie is no guarantees. He comes into the season, actually had a pretty good year for Tennessee last year. I think in a lot of ways underrated for what he did, but his yards per target number was good, and passer rating throwing at him was good. He's a good tackler. Does a fair number of things well. He'll come into a very well-defined system where I think he has a good chance to play well with safeties behind him. And for a lot of reasons, I think Awuzie is a guy who should help the Ravens. But they're also depending on him. And if he comes in and he's Rock Ya-Sin right away and it's just not the kind of player he was before, he got old all of a sudden, then the Ravens have another big problem on their hands and will have to go out and find a corner. So a lot of pressure on that corner position. The easiest solution is going to be just leaving Humphrey on the outside with Wiggins and finding a new slot corner. That's going to be cheaper than trying to go out and find another guy who meets your normal length and size expectations for that outside corner position. So they have a reasonable totem pole of guys with Humphrey, Awuzie. Sorry, the order would be Wiggins, Humphrey, and Awuzie probably on the outside, or Humphrey, Wiggins, and Awuzie either way. And then the remaining guys, who would be two probably of JAD and Kone slash longer beam, but it would be nice if they had, you know, a better set of cornerbacks that they could really depend on than those specific six. I wouldn't want to be in a position where I had to go with those six guys at corner to start the year. And they probably will have six corners on the roster. And then they have to figure out how many safeties they're going to carry, but I would think it would be five for 11 total DBs. And so we'll see how that, that works out. But most of the Ravens alignments, if they want to play a safety at weak side linebacker on third down, so go with a dime back, they really need to have five safeties active on game day. Not usually a problem in terms of how much those guys can help you on special teams, but it might be a problem in terms of having five guys that are good enough to play it for the Baltimore Ravens on game day. So we'll see how that works out. And again, it's going to be one of my big things the rest of camp is to look at JAD at safety, in OTAs and camp, and see if he's progressing, if he seems to be moving to the football well, is he generating good brackets? Does he bracket the football under and over? Does he play the back end instead of playing the front end after a move from corner? You know, what's the guy, what is he trying to do in terms of influencing play of the game and the quarterback, reading the quarterback as we go through the rest of OTA? So that'll be fun to see. I think that is it for today's stuff. So the three things going through one more time in terms of what, we've got one more, and it's the most important of all in terms of what they do with this cap space. So the first one is hoard it for the season, including the trade deadline. The second one is sign a safety. And we went through a whole bunch of stuff about the safety rule. But the third one is sign some of your entering year four players now. And you've got a whole bunch of these guys, plus two other veterans in Owe, who's playing on the year five option, and Andrews, who's playing on the last year of his deal, who could be extended. But I'll remind you, but we still got Linderbaum playing on the last year of his contract. Hamilton is signed for the fifth year. So you don't have to solve that problem right away, but it'd probably be cheaper to solve it right away. And would make more sense. You got Travis Jones. He's absolutely central to the pass rush. There is nobody in line behind him. There is no one. So if Travis Jones is lost, they're going to have to, it'll be a high draft priority. It will might guide their first or second round selection next year. And it's kind of not a good position you want to be in the draft. So Travis Jones becomes a very high priority for signing the rest of the time. They, of course, have Isaiah Likely. They do have a fallback option, probably with a franchise tag next year for Likely, because the tight end number is so cheap. And then Daniel Falele, a lot of people don't like him, but he might be kind of cheap right now. You know, if you jump in and you get Falele, maybe you get him at 3 years, $14 million, 3 years, $12 million, something like that. And that could be pretty exciting in terms of value if he can maintain what he did in the last five games of the season. There's going to be limitations in a player like this, but I'll say this. Let me just toss this out there. There's a lot of people still defending who Patrick Queen is as an inside linebacker. I think after we saw him play a year with the Steelers and frankly suck as much as he did this last year, I can't understand why people would still be doing that. Okay, he's a first-round draft pick. He has a pedigree. He came out of LSU, and he looked pretty good when he was playing with Roquan for a couple of years in there. But when he's put back in a Mike role, he is a complete fish out of water, and it really shows you just how much he needed to move to the will to be a decent football player in the NFL. It'll be interesting to see how the Steelers do that, if they'll keep him at the mic this next year, because I think Queen would do a lot better moving to the will. And we ought to be, frankly, very thankful if the Steelers leave him in that mic role. It's a tremendous open gashed wound of a weakness in that Steelers defense to be able to get Derrick Henry into level two against a player like Queen, who's not a very good tackler to start with. And obviously, had a complete aversion to contact in that playoff game that we noticed. And I know he said he was sick and all that. Don't really care. Whatever the case was, he was broadly criticized for that game by Bill Belichick and others. And I'm no different. I look at that and I say that's one of the worst performances I've ever seen for an inside linebacker in a important NFL football game. So I think that if you can defend Patrick Queen for his play, I think you ought to be able to look at Daniel Falele and say, yeah, there are limitations here. He can't do everything that we might ask him to do. He can't pull very effectively. He's not a great zone blocker. But then I look at what happened with the Ravens last year. Well, they put themselves in a bad position when they asked Falele to pull a couple times on pass plays. I think they both occurred against the Steelers, and maybe each of them was a pressure on a pull that he allowed. That's not going to work. I mean, the Ravens coaches just need to understand what Falele's limitations are and not ask him to make some sort of across the formation block on a pass play that would be relatively easily avoidable by a quicker outside linebacker. Doesn't make any sense. If you're looking for what does the guy do well, he moves people. He does tremendous job on double teams. He's made much better use of his length the last five games. He cut the penalties to nothing, which is huge. I mean, that was a problem for the Ravens for most of the season, for 10 games of the season it was. And then several of the players really cleaned their act up. And the important ones being both guards, McCary and Falele. Those are guys that I think I understand the limitations of Falele. I understand some of the limitations in terms of how he limits your team as a whole, being that by him playing right guard, your parking lot puzzle got a lot simpler and more difficult to solve in a way, because you've got Falele who cannot be moved from that position. I think we've seen enough of him at tackle to know that's not going to work out. And there's no other offensive line position that he could play. The mobility concerns at left guard are too high. He's obviously never going to be a center, and I wouldn't want him at either tackle spot. So right guard is it. There's some guys who are left tackle or nothing. He's actually right guard or nothing. And it could be that he regresses and he's not the player he was at the end of 2024, and we'll be upset about it. But I think signing him right now would be a really nice gamble if they were to do it at the right price. Now, the other thing I'd say is, all of these things, we can talk about the Ravens wanting to make these signings, but the truth of the matter is, it takes two to tango. I think what the Ravens will do, and I think is correct, is they will offer multiple right-priced options to these players. It could be that all six of these guys have some sort of a contract offer on the table. It may not be appealing, and actually, I guess we're talking about eight guys, with Linderbaum, Hamilton, Jones, likely Falele, Kohler, Owe, and Andrews. All eight of those guys could have offers on the table at some level, or they could be staging them out and try to figure it out. The Ravens may stage them out. If contract negotiations stall, they'll just say, okay, we're going to have to come back to you at a later time. And then somebody else will sign because they start negotiations with them. That's one way to do it. I like how Major League Baseball teams look at their draft picks generally, and they'll draft, and this is something the Orioles have done, they'll draft a bunch of pitchers between rounds 10 and 19. And they're not expecting to get all of them. A lot of them are high school pitchers, and there'd be some college pitchers in there too, but whatever the case, they're not expecting to be able to sign all of them, but they make an offer to each of them. And then it's whoever takes the offer first gets it. And they've got a certain number of total pool of dollars that they have to use to sign their draft picks. And they're willing to go a little higher on some players, a little lower on others. It doesn't necessarily exactly correspond to where they got them in the draft. So that's an interesting kind of wrinkle to the baseball draft and baseball salaries, but it's applicable here to football, I think, in that you have multiple offers on the table and you see who's good with their right priced offer. A lot of players want to play with the Baltimore Ravens right now. And it could be that of these eight guys, there are three or four or five who say, I can't make the price work with the Ravens. I'm going to have to become a free agent. And some of those guys may already know it. Isaiah Likely is not acting like it when he's at camp and he's doing charity events. That's fantastic. Okay. Mark Andrews is not acting like it, but who knows? Okay. Adafe Owe came to camp 20 pounds heavier, looks like he's ready to have a better power game in terms of what he does. Don't know what he's thinking in terms of how that, he's preparing himself to hit free agency or to try and get re-signed by the Ravens. I'm not sure what the goals are, but any of these eight guys may already say it's not going to work. And to the degree it won't, the Ravens have to be smart and not overpay for those guys. I think one of the real risks of overpaying on is Tyler Linderbaum, because the market has been set and then it's been gummed up by the Cam Jurgens contract, which didn't make any sense. So I think it's possible that a player like Linderbaum, I think it's likely that he'll want more than what Cam Jurgens made. But he should also realize that the Ravens want to pay him less than what Creed Humphrey makes. And there's almost no difference between those two contracts. $17 million AAV on Jurgens, $18 million AAV on Creed Humphrey. and it doesn't really, it doesn't lend itself to easy negotiations. PFF just also called Linderbaum the second best center in the game. It is a thin group, admittedly, at the top, but there are other guys that I think, you know, could have been given that number two level. One of the issues, of course, and we've talked about this many times, is that PFF has an unreasonable weighting towards run blocking for centers. It's simply not that important. It's not as important as pass blocking at any position. And in fact, analogous situation I could say is your number four hitter in baseball is supposed to be a slugger, right? Supposed to be a guy who can bring home runners, advance runners, whatnot. It's still more important to be an on base percentage guy in the number four spot. It doesn't matter. Actually, the four spot leads off the second most innings of any position in the entire lineup. You better have a good on base percentage when you're hitting that spot. The five spot as well, very important. But it's a place where I think people lose sight of the forest for the trees in terms of what's important. He's a flashy, good run blocker, and he's got real weaknesses as a pass blocker that I think set his place in the markets. And he's a top quartile center, no doubt about it. I mean, I'd pay him like that, which means, you know, I'd want to pay him 85% of what Creed Humphrey makes on a four-year deal. I don't think that's bad, but the Cam Jurgens deal makes that bad. And so it makes it potentially a very difficult negotiation position. And there will be teams who have cap, and maybe that Linderbaum is a guy that moves on. The leadership component of it, I think you probably can overstate. The Steelers have a great young center right away in Frazier, who is playing the position at a very high level, is handling the various components of it at a high level. I think he'd be a guy, for example, who would bring you a similar level of leadership. So I don't want the Ravens to overpay. Anyway, enough said, enough soapboxing. That's how I kind of feel about it. It is the third thing they can do, and none of these have a big high cap cost, is to make some of these signings. They've got some money this year. They can even front end these contracts to a certain degree to pay some additional money in year one if that's what they want to do. And the other thing that's out there that has been suggested is going out and getting Jalen Ramsey. I specifically would not do that. I think that the more you go after a high-priced external free agent at this point, you're probably not going to get value. And in the case of Ramsey, it happens to be a trade. So you have to give up something to get him. And you know, then of course he carries a big high cap number. If you're going to have the Dolphins take a part of that cap, then that means that the Ravens will have to pay draft capital to get it. I'm not in favor of that either. So the basic problem is this, that when you buy into an older player, you're generally buying into a decline phase. You already are paying based on what the player has done recently. It's possible, you know, one of the intriguing parts about Ramsey is it's possible he could move to safety. I think there's some additional risk involved in that as well, despite the fact he's, you know, he has been a hell of a defensive back at times in the past. I'm just not that excited about a huge cap investment in Jalen Ramsey. So hopefully the Ravens will find a younger guy, a multi-year solution, which is another issue with Ramsey, is he's not a multi-year solution, and find a way that works for the team. Leave you with one final comment. There is nothing about the Ravens roster which precludes them from winning the Super Bowl as is. Please don't give me the stale old crap about that doesn't work in the playoffs. The Ravens have not won. Have not gotten it done in the playoffs. There's no doubt about that. But it wasn't because they didn't have the best roster in the entire National Football League in each of the last two seasons. And in fact, if you look at sites like FTN and Aaron Schatz's DVOA, you'd say these are two of the finest teams ever fielded in the last 40 years or so. So yes, it didn't work out, but that's the wrong reason to go burning down the house for other reasons. And burning down the house, you can do it in two ways. You can light a fire that's slow burn is going to go up like you wouldn't believe it over the next couple of years in terms of cap problems you create for yourself. That's the Cleveland Browns strategy. Or you can burn it right away with somebody you bring in. You either trade a lot of draft capital away for, or you commit a lot of cap to this year that precludes you from making these other signings of the eight key players we just talked about. So multiple problems are possible. And I think this is something the Ravens really, really want to avoid, is getting another vet in the door that is not one of their in-house guys. They're in-house vets. They know what they have. They know how they fit into the system currently. And they can give them these right-sized offers that the player is incented to take a year early to take risk off the table, what I call divisible benefit situations. So this is a good opportunity for both sides to get value and to take risk off the table. The reason you go out and buy an insurance policy is not because you're getting value relative to the premiums you pay on an expected basis. If it was, as a pricing actuary, I wouldn't be able to make any money off you as a customer. The reason you do it is because you want to remove risk. And players, a lot of them want to remove risk and are perfectly happy taking a little less money to get a more secure lifetime of earnings. And it's never felt more than a player who's entering the fourth year of his contract. And, you know, very sad situation with Ardarius Washington that he wasn't able to cash in on his career. But another guy who's been around recently for the Ravens who had a similar kind of a loss of career earnings is Brent Urban. Good player. You know, he was a hell of a player when he was approaching free agency, and then he got hurt and you know, took a one-year deal. Then he went on a fairly low deal. And it's just all of that risk is there for a player enter their fourth year, and they're on the hook for it. So it's a good thing for them to get off the table if they can and get an early extension. I think it both sides could benefit. Anyway, that's going to do it today for Film Study. Thanks for listening. A little bit of a long episode and a solo shot, but we haven't done a Friday morning GM in a couple of weeks. Appreciate you listening. Have really appreciate the listens. We're having a problem with the website right now in terms of the articles and the previous podcasts. You should be able to get to the podcast easy enough by going to whatever your podcast system is. And I'm sure you've done that if you got this episode. But in particular, if you want the articles and look at offensive line scoring from last year or whatever, we're figuring out how to get that back. I've had a problem with WordPress that we're needing to work through. But appreciate your patience with that. We'll get it back up, I hope, in the next couple of days or so. That'll be it for today. Also, DM me if you're interested in doing a film study short. I will have time to do some of that in the coming weeks when the Ravens are done with OTAs. Thanks again for listening. I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.